Alrighty, welcome back to another Wisco Fanatics Wednesday afternoon. Jake and I, we were joined by Simon and Bryant last night. We did a bunch of live mock drafts. We did a full first round like we always do, and then we did a bunch of mock drafts from the Green Bay Packers perspective. Those will get posted this afternoon after the show today, so you'll be able to check those out and just kind of read them without having to watch the entire show. But if you are interested in watching the entire show, hearing us talk through our thought process on why we're taking certain players when we are, and going through the strategy of it all, check that out from last night. Other than that, today we have 2 Bucks games and only 5 Brewer games, compared to 3 Bucks games and 8 Brewer games last week. So not quite as much to talk about today, but we're going to start with the Bucks in the playoffs and then hit the Brewers, their 5 games in the last week. So let's hit the intro and start talking basketball.
Welcome to another live episode of the Wisco Fanatics Show, where we discuss the Packers, Bucks, Brewers, Badgers football, and basketball from an optimistic perspective. Wisco Fanatics is brought to you by Cardboard Legacy, Wisconsin's most complete sports card shop. Buy, sell, grade, and consign all at their location in Oshkosh.
Okay, so we are in the playoffs now for the Milwaukee Bucks. They played 2 games. They played Saturday afternoon and they played last night, kind of a weird 3-day gap in between games given the no location change, which is odd, but it is what it is. So we're going to start with game 1. Jake, what were your takeaways from Saturday's game?
So obviously we all saw the game that Giannis had. You watched the game or you checked the box score. He was doing everything he could, 36-12, 14-23 from the field. And then you look at the other starters, right? Obviously no Dame in game 1. The other starters combined to have 14 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists, shoot 5 of 20 from the field and 1 of 9 from the 3-point line. Plain and simple, that's not going to get it done. Now, we are optimistic, but we also call ourselves realistic. That's not going to get it done. It doesn't matter if it's a regular season game against the goddamn Pelicans. You might lose that game if you shoot like that with the starters, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously the bench was a little bit better. Kevin Porter Jr., I have some thoughts on him. And my thought, 12-5-5, when you look at it in totality, it's not terrible, right? But when I was watching him and I did the eye test and I compared it to the 8-game win streak, he wasn't getting downhill. He looked like he was trying to avoid turnovers. And, we're going to put a pin in that because we're going to talk about him in game 2.
Yep.
Gary Trent Jr., that guy comes to play. There's a reason I wanted this guy on the Bucks. This guy's not afraid of any moment. He will shoot the ball. He will try to defend. He will go to the rim. Gary Trent Jr. is a gamer.
Yeah.
Reason I wanted him, I was like, dude, this guy fits like a glove. We can have a discussion after this talking about, changes that need to be made. He's the guy that I would put in the starting lineup, in my opinion, just because of one reason. And the first reason I'm going to talk about is A.J. Green. Now, A.J. Green shot well in game 1, 5-11 from behind the arc. He was the only shooter that really showed up.
Yep.
From a consistency standpoint, making 5 of the team's 9 3-pointers. nobody else really stretched the floor for them, but the Pacers are hunting him on defense. They really are. And the Bucks have to figure out if they're switching, if they're not switching, if they're going to play zone. They have to figure some of that stuff out.
Yep, I have thoughts on that as well.
Yeah, what's up, Connor? How you doing? If you're going to switch, just switch, dude. Honestly, if you don't feel like Brook Lopez can switch, play Sims more. If that's the style of defense that you want to play, just go.
And that's the thing, is that they were doing a lot of switching in last night's game,
yeah.
But it wasn't getting communicated well enough, and there was a scenario where Bobby and Giannis were going against Siakam and Halliburton.
Yeah.
And Bobby didn't switch onto Halliburton, and he got a wide open 3.
Yeah.
Like, now, that's the stuff that can't happen if you're going to switch everything.
Yeah, so that's why people really like Sims next to Giannis, because Sims will just switch. Sims is a defensive first guy, and he will switch. He wants to stop people. So I would like to see a little bit more of Sims and Giannis lineup, honestly, especially in crunch time situations where you need to get some stops. Like if the Pacers start hot, they started hot the last 2 games. If they start hot, you put in Sims and you try to get some stops.
I would like to see Sims starting the 4th quarter.
I would love that as well. Sims with Giannis to start the 4th quarter. Then you could sit Giannis for a little bit while Dame is
ready. And then you put Bobby in for 5-6 minutes.
Yeah.
And then you bring in Giannis and Brooke back.
Yeah, and hopefully they can, finish it.
Yeah.
So that's really my main thoughts. My last 2 thoughts, sorry. They need to be more physical on defense. I know they I know Doc Rivers talked about that, so I'm happy that he talked about it and they were more physical in the next game. Also, how are the Pacers allowed to just mug Giannis every single possession? But if you breathe near Halliburton, it's like foul, foul, foul. Like, dude, there's like four people around Giannis at every single time. You could literally call a foul. They every can complain single all time. They want. They can count to 10 as many times as they want, pretend they're in preschool. I don't give a shit. You can do all that all you want. I don't care. But it could be a foul literally every time on the floor.
Yeah.
It could. You can combat me and say that I'm just crying and all that stuff. I don't care. It could be a foul literally every single time.
I have thoughts on officiating in game two specifically.
Yeah, go ahead.
Game one, obviously the Bucks did not shoot well from the three. 9 of 37, that's 24%. I don't expect that to be the norm. I didn't expect that to be the norm for game two. I don't expect that to be the norm for game three and four. They were the best three-point shooting team in the regular season. Yep. You mentioned AJ Green being the only one to really shoot well. My issue, and I know there's a lot of people complaining about Taurean Prince, my issue is he led the league in three-point percentage. Why is he only taking one three-point shot? People are mad that there's a zero in his point column in the box score, but why is the best three-point shooter in the NBA only taking one three?
Yeah, I agree.
So that needs to be – you need to find some way to either get him open or run some off-ball screens for him while Giannis is driving. That's why he plays alongside Giannis, is to shoot threes, to create spacing.
Yep.
Turnovers, Bucks only had 10, allowed 14 points off turnovers. That's manageable. That's not a big deal. Pacers did have 22 fast break points. Again, it's not astronomical. It's pretty much around their average. And it's not an unreasonable number for the Bucks. So I don't have any, like, the Bucks need to do better at getting back on defense. 22 fast break points it's not a back-breaking number. Two other things. People scapegoating Kyle Kuzma for missing 5 shots. Yes, I understand. He did not make any shots. He was 0 for 5. I understand. I see that too. I can read a box score. I understand. Wes and they shot well during their 8-game winning streak. We posted their numbers during the 8-game winning streak. Everybody was hot. It's going to break eventually. Same way, as, you know, the other way around. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, Ryan Rollins missed 6 shots. Kevin Porter Jr. missed 5 shots. Bobby Portis missed 6 shots. It's not just one guy that needed to be better in this game.
Yeah.
It's everybody. And, you know, the bottom line is the Bucks didn't get really dominated in any specific way. They just have to make their shots, especially their threes. And you tiptoed around this without quite exactly saying it, but the Bucks need Damian Lillard.
Yep.
Giannis needs Damian Lillard because there needs to be somebody else with gravity on the floor with Giannis.
Mm.
Because when Giannis is on the floor, I don't care who the other 5 players are. 4 out of 5 Pacers are paying attention to Giannis within 2 feet of him.
Yeah.
And there was times where they're sending 2, 3, 4 defenders at Giannis, which is to be expected. But then you need all your role players making their threes. That's how this team is built. That's how any team around Giannis is going to be built. If you are going to say, we should trade Giannis to give him a chance to win somewhere else, they're going to build a team around Giannis by having Giannis and surrounding him with shooters. They're going to build a team the same way the Bucks are. So there's not just some inherent other chance for him to win by being traded out of Milwaukee. So stop doing that shit.
What happened when LeBron went from Cleveland to Miami? They did the exact same thing Cleveland did. They just did it to a better extent.
Yeah.
They put better shooters around him than Cleveland ever could. And look at what happened. They won a couple titles.
And gave him somebody with chemistry.
Yep.
So
it works.
Yeah. And we saw the Bucks chemistry with Dame and Giannis come together better. Yeah. We're going to talk about Dame in just a second, and we'll get to game two. But again, you just have to make your threes. I mean, the Bucks, like I said, they were the number one 3-point shooting team in the regular season. You just have to make your threes. That's mm-hmm. It's not a coaching failure. It's not a player failure. It's just that's how a team around Giannis is going to be built. So that's my big thing with game one. As we go to game two, The reason I'm saying that the Bucks need Damian Lillard is obviously for the gravity. Yep. Also, you need somebody else who is not afraid to take shots. And I don't think Gary Trent is afraid to take shots, but I think at times AJ Green is afraid to shoot. I think at times, like Rollins, Kevin Porter Jr. afraid to shoot. I think at times Torian Prince is afraid to shoot. I think at times Brooke Lopez is afraid to shoot. The only guys that I think really have the I will shoot at any time and I don't care if I miss or make are Giannis, Bobby Portis, and Damian Lillard.
You gotta think of it in kind of baseball terms in this way. Who's the guys you're going to give the green light to on a 3-0? Yeah. You're going to give it to your two best players, right? So the guys who get the ultra green light on this basketball team are obviously going to be Dame and Giannis. They're paid to do that kind of stuff. Yep. So I 100% agree.
Yeah, and Brad, I mean, if it's – I don't know if it's being scared or saving energy for defense or being tired from playing defense, but Prince shot like 45% on threes in the regular season. You got to let it fly.
Yeah.
And, you know, now that we're into game two, Kevin Porter Jr. need to make better decisions. You talked about looking like in game one, you looked like he was trying not to turn over the ball. And in game two, just way too loose.
I was going to actually compare it to, and this is going to sound crazy, but Goldilocks and the Three Bears, right? So literally is how I thought about it.
I get where you're going now. It sounded weird at first, but I get where you're going.
He was a little, you know, not aggressive enough in game one. And then he was a little over aggressive in game two. Now, they always say that role players play better at home anyways. He could come home, get comfortable for a few days. I don't agree with that. But, you know, if he could find that medium, you know, area where he was during the 8-game win streak, where he was playing beautiful basketball, and him and Giannis, and this is why we were laughing at all the people that are like, we don't need Dame. Please log off the internet for the day. Kevin Porter Jr. just needs to find that middle area. I mean, he made a crazy three-pointer yesterday at the end of the buzzer, but he was erratic at times, man. I mean, going to the rim, that layup that he shot yesterday where he had to turn around and flip it over his right hand, I was like, dude, you are getting sped up way too much right now.
And that leads to the thing that bothers me, which is him leaving his feet to pass.
Yes.
You just can't do it. It's going to end up in turnovers more than it's going to end up in assists.
Yeah.
Like coaches at every single level will tell you not to leave your feet when you pass.
Yeah.
Now, team-wise, the Bucks were 14-35 on threes. That's 40%. That's good. I'm fine with that. That's right on with the season averages. Much improved from game one, but the Pacers, 16-36, 44.4%.
Mm-hmm.
So the Bucks get their three-point shooting back, but then the Pacers make a bunch of them on their own. Mm-hmm. Bobby Portis, 6-11 on threes. Hell yeah. Love that. Turnovers, Bucks had 15. 11 of them came in the first half, and 13 points off of turnovers in that first half.
Yeah.
Second half, they cleaned it up. They only had 4 turnovers in the second half, only allowed 2 points off those turnovers in the second half. So second half, they did a much better job cleaning up the turnovers, and surprise, surprise, they were able to close the gap towards the end of the game. Now, it was a little too late, but the way that they played like the last 3-4 minutes of the fourth quarter, if they play that way for an entire 48 minutes, they're going to win games.
Yes.
Brad said too much zone defense, I thought. Now, I actually have some thoughts on the defense. Now, I think I don't hate mixing man and zone, but we just talked about this where if you are getting into a situation where you are going to switch everything, it has to be communicated better. The communication has to be there. You can't be getting lost on switches. So I'm fine with mixing up, you know, say the three defenses of man-to-man, zone, and switching everything. I'm fine with mixing them up because it throws the Pacers off once in a while. And the Bucks have gotten some stops while doing it with all three of them, but they're just not getting stops consistently enough. And the communication has to be there when you are going from one defense to the other.
Yeah.
That's my biggest problem. I don't hate the zone defense. It just, the communication has to be there.
So you mind if I jump in real quick?
Jump in.
Okay. So actually I was going to ask a question at the end of game two segment, but I'm just going to kind of say my point a little bit because I do like the zone defense. I think the Bucks actually play with more energy on offense. They save their legs.
I like it when they do like more of like a 2-1-2 than a 2-3.
I think that if you're going to switch to a zone, especially towards like end of quarters and stuff, you're going to try to get them out of their rhythm. And if you're going to do a 2-1-2 or some variation of it, I want Ajax on the top. Now, Ajax is a guy Now, just hear me out for a sec. How Christian Braun plays for the Nuggets. You put him at the top. You let him leak out, you know, once you get rebounds. He could literally just be a freaking monster in transition for the Bucks if they put him at the top of the defense. Also, he's going to be a guy that fights over screens. He's going to give energy. And you know what? If he uses his six fouls, who gives a crap? He wasn't in the rotation in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Let him rough up Nembhard. Let him rough up Halliburton a little bit. Let him feel the floor. Let him body him up a little bit. And he's going to talk a little trash too. That's fine. He played really good defense against SGA in the NBA Cup final, getting over screens because they set a million screens for SGA. Obviously, mm-hmm. He's a monster when he goes to the rim. So I wouldn't mind Ajax at the top of the zone towards end of quarters, kind of like what Boonholzer used to do with Thanasis. You knew Thanasis was athletic. You knew he was going to give energy, and he was going to play hard. Ajax is
the same. The fouls, it didn't matter. Yeah, that's the Thanasis point is fair.
Yeah, so I like Ajax, you know, towards end of quarters if you're going to go a zone to try to take him out of the rhythm a little bit, give him a different look. Send him in there, tell him, dude, you have six fouls. You're going to play probably about a total of 4 minutes in this game. You have 4 minutes for six fouls. Make sure it's not a stupid shooting foul, obviously, but
right. You're
allowed to body him up if you have a foul to give. Go ahead, knock him down.
Yeah, go in there and fly around.
Yeah, play hard.
I don't hate it. My last couple of things – only four fast break points. That's really good job. That's a really good job to only allow the leading team in fast break points to only get four. That was a big deal for me. And my last two things here, I do not care for the inconsistent officiating. And it's not even so much that it's like lopsided to the Pacers than it is for the Bucks, because both teams shot 19 free throws.
Yeah.
The Bucks missed six and the Pacers didn't miss any.
Yeah.
But it's more so the types of calls that are being made, where it seems like on one side, softer foul calls are happening versus what's being called for the Bucks. And then there was a stretch in the third quarter where Kyle Kuzma was playing fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Kyle Kuzma was fantastic in the third quarter last night. He was getting feet to the paint and he was making all of his runners, which is Kyle Kuzma's shot. I understand that it's overall, if you look at, you know, basketball players, like, you don't want a lot of guys, except for maybe point guards, shooting a lot of running floaters. But that's Kyle Kuzma's game.
Yeah.
He excels at those shots. Like, he practices those shots. Those are his shots, those running floaters and, you know, the running shots and the going across the lane layups. That's Kyle Kuzma's game.
Mm-hmm.
So he was doing that very well last night. He made, I think, four of them in the third quarter alone, and three or four of them could have been foul calls.
I agree. At least the last two, guaranteed the last two could have been and ones.
There should have been at least one or two with potential for all four of them to have been fouls.
Yeah.
Brad said the problem is there's no communication. Now you're playing 4-on-5 with Ajax in on offense. And that's the thing is, like, we need Ajax to develop more offensively before we can put him out there, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, that's why I say you put him in there for the last couple of minutes of a quarter, and you just have him leak out. Because if he can force some havoc and you can get a steal, you know, Kevin Porter Jr. has been very good at, you know, jumping passing lanes.
Right.
You have both of those two on top. Kevin Porter Jr. can get a steal. He could throw it up to Ajax. Ajax jumps out of the gym, dude. He can go finish a layup or a dunk, you know. So that's kind of my thought on it. I agree that he does, you know, really handcuff the offense when he's in there, though.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Damian Lillard obviously didn't shoot well, but hopefully he just got all the rust off. That's really all I was looking for. I wasn't expecting Damian Lillard to come back and shoot 8-for-11 from the field and 5 out of 6 on threes.
Yeah.
Like, that's not what I was expecting. Just for him to come in, get the rust off, get a feel. This was literally him and Giannis's first game together in the playoffs. So people are like, oh, is Giannis and Dame pairing a failure? It's like, they've played one playoff game together now.
Yeah, they were saying that before they played a playoff game.
Yeah, which is wild to me.
Yeah.
The impatience, the instant gratification world is wild. And the last thing that I wanted to say, the Bucks have been down 0-2 before. They were down 0-2 to the Nets. They were down 0-2 to the Suns, and they won a championship. They're capable of being down 0-2 and winning series.
Yep.
Okay. Give me your thoughts from game 2.
Yeah, so the others, so I didn't add Dame in there. You know, first game back from deep vein thrombosis. Sorry, trying to talk a little bit too fast there. I agree. He looked good. 14-3-7, 4-13 from the field, 2-8 from three. He had a bomb, a clutch bomb towards the end of this game that cut the lead to two.
Good. Yeah, good point.
That was disgusting. And that was – he was pretty well guarded, to be honest with you. I think Nemhard was shocked that he shot that, dude. But it's like, this is Dame, bro. It's clutch time. He's going to pull that shit. Giannis, an incredible game. I think you mentioned Giannis, 34-18-7. I mean, that's just – that's incredible stuff. Giannis is – the best. And also, he's not leaving. He's not going anywhere. Just a little sidebar. I was talking with Tyler earlier, and they were talking, and it was the great Michael Wilbon. And I respect Michael Wilbon. I like Michael Wilbon. He's one of the OGs. But when they're talking about this game today, it was today, I believe, on NBA, on ESPN or whatever their show is called now. And they're watching the press conference, and they're trying to make a story out of the words that he says, like, is he talking about game three, or is he talking usually he's joking around. It's like, dude, the Bucks are down 0-2. The Pacers just protected home court. His mind, and he literally said that my mind is on game three. Like, he literally said those words. And they still try to make it seem like, oh, is he talking about leaving Milwaukee? Is he talking? What other NBA superstar has ever dealt with this?
They don't even do it with Jokic, whose head coach and GM were just fired.
The thing about it, and you know, now it's going to be worse because, you know, Dallas traded Luka, not even taking into consideration that their freaking GM probably has a brain aneurysm. That guy is something else. The answers that he gave, I didn't know how important Luka was. You don't think a 25-year-old superstar is important, you dipshit? Anyways, that's a different conversation. Unlike LeBron, where LeBron, you know, it always kind of felt like he could leave Cleveland, right? And that's the biggest superstar I can compare Giannis to, because he's been the biggest superstar over the last 15 years in the NBA. Him and Curry. Curry's never said a word about leaving. I understand that they were winning rings, but there was times when they weren't winning. Did they talk about him leaving Golden State? I don't remember as much as Giannis. No. And Giannis has never said anything that's literally going to lean them towards, you know, leaving Milwaukee. So it's whatever. Back to the discussion at hand, game two here. The others played a lot better. I'm talking about Taurean Prince. Oh, dude, I almost said Tayshaun again. I had a forced Taurean out of my mouth. Pause. Kuzma and Brook Lopez, they all played much better in this game. They combined for 26, 4 rebounds, 6 assists, 10 of 20 from the field, so 50%, and 4 of 10 from 3. So they were much better in this game. Bobby Portis had a really good bounce back game, 28-12, 11-19 from the field, 6 three-pointers for Bobby. In game one, he was 0-4 from three, but it felt like every single one of them was freaking rimmed out, dude. Halfway down, I was like, dude, Bobby is this close. He's going to have a good game in game two. We talked about Gary Trent Jr. being kind of erratic going towards the rim and his decision-making, jumping, passing the ball.
Kevin Porter Jr., not Gary Trent Jr.
Yeah, sorry, Kevin Porter Jr. I was looking at Gary Trent. Gary Trent Jr. Only had 4 points, 1-4, so we're going to need him to have a bounce-back game. I think the bench is going to go crazy the next two games. Yeah. I firmly believe that.
I could see Bobby Portis having like a 25-point or a double-double this week.
Brad, I was talking about that, actually. I was like, dude, if you're only going to play Sims for 6 minutes, dude, when Halliburton comes to the rim for that little floater, you have Sims take an extra step up and – Let him meet
you. Get your money's worth on a foul, not trying to like injure somebody.
Yeah, you go up with hands up with the chest, like you're defending it. I don't want you to, you know, Bill Laimbeer anybody.
Right.
Like, I'm not trying to take anybody's jawline on or anything, but
if they're gonna foul for a slight bit of body contact, you might as well just make it full body.
Yeah,
contact.
You might as well make it feel you, right? Like, that's the term that coaches use, make them feel you. Make them feel you. Go take a little extra step up. You can even do it with Brook Lopez. You have the depth now with Sims and Bobby healthy, right?
Brad said that's what he would use Ajax for.
The thing is Ajax isn't very – he's not a thick guy, you know? Brook and Sims, those are big boys.
Yeah. Ajax
– and they already want to fight Bobby, so I wouldn't use it, Bobby.
For Ajax to make a hard foul, he would have to have, like, speed built up, and then you're getting into, like, flagrant scenarios.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to handicap us. I want it to be a regular foul, right? But I do want us to make him feel it, right? Now, the thing about A.J. Green, I said they're hunting him on defense, and I firmly believe that's why he only played 12 minutes last night. When he came into the game, he usually is guarding up top, and he's getting switched on O'Connell, and he's allowing O'Connell to really just dribble around anywhere he wants to go. And O'Connell's creating a lot of havoc. They're getting a lot of wide-open three-pointers off of it. Listen, I love A.J. Green just like everybody else. The guy can shoot. He can stretch the floor. It's exciting when he's making a bunch of three-pointers. Game one was exciting when he made that deep three, that when we Bucks went on a run to kind of make it a game. But you can't have him not making threes, not shooting threes, passing up the ball. He's not a very good ball handler in the first place. So he's literally just going to stand there on offense, and he's going to be a cone on defense. That's just not a recipe for success. I'm not trying to throw in any hate. I'm just talking basketball. Like, people want to get real. They want to pull back the layers and talk about this team. But you're going to have some tough conversations. And A.J. Green right now against the Pacers is not a good fit.
Yeah, I trust in a series like this, I trust Gary Trent Jr. more.
I do, too. I think, you know, if the Bucks end up going in and playing Cleveland, now Cleveland has a lot of guards, too, but they don't pass the ball and move the ball as much as Indiana does.
You can put A.J. Green on Sam Merrill.
Sam Merrill not dribbling
in circles and running around in circles as much as T.J. McConnell.
Yes, he's a bad matchup versus T.J. McConnell. But, yes, against a team like the Cavaliers, which would be our next matchup if the Bucks, you know, go on a run here, he's a much better matchup for a team like Cleveland.
Yeah, that's fair.
Same thing with Torian Prince, in my opinion, as well, which is why he's kind of struggling in this series, too. The Pacers are a good team. I mean, as much as I don't like them, as much as I wish that Nembhard would get clocked in the face by Bobby Portis every once in a while when I'm watching the game, I mean, he's running his mouth like a guy who's a freaking 10-year vet. He's been to 10 All-Star games. Dog, you have done nothing. You hit a couple jumpers in the playoffs. Chill the fuck out, dude.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Brad, we had this same conversation as we were ending our mock draft show yesterday, how Giannis can get hit in the face and then have his shoulder grabbed and it not be a flagrant foul. That's what I'm talking about with the inconsistency.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, what in what universe is grabbing a shoulder a common foul?
Yeah, and the neck. The neck is really what it is for me. If they grab just on the shoulders, I mean, I guess I could
see. Still, if you're pulling a guy down by the shoulders, that has to be flagrant.
I mean, that's a good point. Think about the NFL. They literally just banned, you know, the hip drop tackle, and they have a flag, horse, you know, collars. for horse collar, because it's dangerous in football. Now you're talking about basketball, which is a much less physical sport.
If you are behind somebody and pulling down on their shoulder, that should be flagrant.
Yeah, you could seriously injure somebody like that.
Yeah, exactly. That's why they made it flagrant.
Yeah.
All right. You have any other thoughts on game 2?
We'll be fine.
So game 3 will be Friday night. We will probably be watching on our phones because we will be at the draft.
Yep.
And then game 4 is Sunday night, 8:30 Central Time.
Now,
that's a wild time to have a game scheduled, but the NBA has the worst scheduling in my mind by far out of the major sports. So it is what it is, but we will be back discussing game 3 and game 4 next week. I meant to look, game 5 will be 3 days after. So is that going to be Wednesday?
I believe so.
I think it's Wednesday, Saturday.
Yeah, it's weird that they have the 3 days off, and then between game 3 and 4 they have the 1 day off. It would be the 29th, so Tuesday. So game 5 would be Tuesday. So it'll be Friday, Sunday, Tuesday. So we will have all 3 games because the Bucks are winning the next 2.
Okay. So we'll have 3 Bucks games next week then. All right. We do have 5 Milwaukee Brewers games to discuss. Brewers, they played a home series against the A's, and then they played the first 2 of a road series against the San Francisco Giants. That series will continue tonight. But the Brewers won their series against the A's, and let's start with game 1.
Yeah, so the Brewers had 6 players get a hit, so that's a good thing. I'm going to start tracking how many players get hits and if it matters for wins and losses. So I think – now this is going to be – there's 2 things that I'm going to track. I'm going to track 6 hits and 5 runs. So I think if you have 6 players get hits, you're getting a lot of people on base. We've talked about this for years, but having, you know, runners in scoring position, if you go for a 1 for 18, I'm really not going to be that upset. I'm going to be disappointed because I didn't cash in more, but you're getting ducks in the pond, right?
For me, it would be almost more important to track like how many guys they get on per inning.
Oh yeah, there you go.
But then you're talking about like something that I've pointed out a couple of times is stringing hits together. If you have 6 hits and you have 1 hit per inning, versus 6 hits in 1 inning, that's 2 very different stories in my mind.
Yep, that's a good point. I'll change it up for you. I'm just trying to come with different stuff because Tyler does a really nice job, you know, giving you guys exit velocities and spin rates and all the good nerdy baseball stats.
Oh, just wait. I have the A's. I have a lot of.
I already know. I already knew you did, dude.
I'm going to talk about Brian Hudson heavily.
So the Brewers got their first run after Terang replaced Durbin at first after his first career hit. So congratulations to Durbin. This is the week of first for right, Caleb Durbin.
Missing a home run by this much.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I agree, Connor.
Durbin's a guy, yeah, recent.
And then, Churio ended up roping one to left, and then Yelly hit Churio home. Both RBIs were two outs. So, like, you're talking about
three RBIs with two outs in this game.
Yeah, he had. Yeah. But I was just strictly talking about the first. But yes,
I got you. All right, sorry.
Contreras also had an RBI and Churio, you know, like I said, with two outs. Durbin had a really, really nice catch by the A's dugout in the fifth. That was impressive. Mm-hmm. I wanted to note that because that, you know, for a guy, you know, playing his first game in Miller Park, I'm still going to call it Miller Park, to be able to navigate the field like that, I thought was really impressive. Yelly got his second two-out RBI after Terang got an infield single. So, you know, we're talking about doing contextual things. Terang got to lead the MLB in infield singles. His speed is just such a weapon for him. But for him to get on with an RBI single, get his fifth stolen base of the year, Churio ends up walking, and then Yelly to get a hit to get an RBI to extend the lead at that point. In that at bat, Yelly saw nothing but sliders, and the fourth one was just not a good one. He hung it and got a lot of plate, and Yelly crushed it. We had three players with one. That was the next game. Sorry, all my notes are very close together because I wrote a lot of words. But yeah, so the bullpen also did a good job. Mears, Uribe, Anderson's kind of turning into a weapon for us. And I'm gonna stop right there because then we get to talk about Hudson. And you said you have a lot of stuff on Hudson, so I'm gonna leave.
Yeah. So. I want to start at the beginning with Freddie Peralta. He had kind of a high pitch count. He was at 60 pitches through three innings. Didn't give up any runs or anything like that. He finished five innings pitched on 93 pitches, but did generate 16 swing and misses. So good job there. That's four more than the rest of every other pitcher in this game put together.
Mm.
For both teams.
Mm-hmm.
Freddie Peralta generated 16 swing and misses in his five innings pitched. More than the other 13 innings combined of A's and Brewers pitchers. They had 12.
Peralta is – he's underappreciated by MLB, in my opinion.
Yeah. In the top of the fourth inning, he gave up two one-out singles. Normally a flyball pitcher, did a really good job to get a ground ball double play to finish that inning. He did have four and three walks in his last two outings. So for him to only have one in this game and then gave up seven hits, all were singles. So he did a pretty good job of limiting damage, in my opinion.
Yep.
You mentioned Durbin. His first at-bat just missed a home run, like 3 feet to the left. Instead, legs out an infield single. His second at-bat, he had a ground out. Third at-bat, he had a bloop single. And then his fourth at-bat, he had a good rip, but was a flyout. He's the 11th Brewer to have multiple hits in his Brewers debut. So love that for him. Murphy said he is the starting third baseman for the foreseeable future.
He's been really good since.
He's been really good. I would have been okay with starting him there for the beginning of the regular season.
Yeah, me too.
Like Oliver Dunn plays good defense, and Vinny Capra was coming out of spring training super hot. So I understand why they went the Dunn-Capra route. But once those two weren't producing, it's like, all right, it's Durbin time because he's tearing up AAA, and it's time to bring him up. He's been the best player out of the trade. For Nestor Cortes and Caleb Durbin versus for Devin Williams, Durbin's been the best player out of the trade so far.
100%.
William Contreras did have a two-out RBI single in the bottom of the seventh that extended his hitting streak to 11 at the point. But let's talk about Brian Hudson. So he came in the ninth inning, gave up a one-out walk, another walk, and a double that made the game 5-2, and the Brewers had to bring in Trevor McGill to get a sack fly and a strikeout to get the last two outs of the game. Hudson hasn't quite been his dominant self. It is still very, very early in the season, but he did add a new pitch this year. He added a sinker, and he's throwing almost no cutters. When last year his cutter was effective, he had a 209 batting average against it, but a 263 expected batting average. But against that same pitch, he had a 512 slug and had a hard hit percentage of 44.7. So they've essentially completely cut out his cutter compared to his four-seam fastball, which had a 33.3% hard hit percentage, and his sweeper had a 34.5%. So it's almost 10% higher hard hits against that cutter that he was throwing. So it had a run value of zero. His cutter last year had a run value of zero compared to plus 12 for his fastball and plus 4 for his sweeper. The movement was below average horizontally and vertically. His new cutter is below average break horizontally by 1.2 inches, but is vertically 5 inches above average break. So he's throwing a new pitch. I'll keep an eye on it, but as he gets more experience and comfortable, I think this pitch, his new sinker, will be more effective than his old cutter. So that's where we're at with Brian Hudson. We're going to talk about him again from last night's game, but we'll get to that spot. So Brewers A's game two, basically this one, Pedro Severino pitched 8 innings and 1-run ball, and then he faced one of the best closers in the game. And we had a conversation about this with Mason Miller. If you called him the best closer of the game, I'm not going to be like, oh my God, no, you're wrong. Like, I wouldn't disagree with you if you said Mason Miller was the best closer in the game.
Yeah.
The top of the first inning kind of encapsulates the Brewers. You get an 0-1 to a 3-1 count, give up a single. Then you get a Bryce Terang web gem on the shortstop side of second base, and then a strike him out, throw him off the play to end the inning. That's just screams that was a Brewers inning right there.
Yeah.
After that, the top of the third, you get a strikeout, a single, and another ground into a double play.
Mm-hmm.
Top of the fifth, you give up straight three.
My mornings are chaos. I need coffee that works as hard as I do. That's why I drink Everyday Dose, coffee with benefits. It's rich, delicious coffee boosted with mushrooms, collagen, and nootropics. Everything I need for focus and balance, ready in 30 seconds. The Black Friday sale is on. Get 61% off your first coffee plus starter kit, a free A2 probiotic creamer, and over $100 in free gifts. Plus, enter for a chance to win $100 cash or get your entire order refunded. Visit everydaydose.com/podcast or use code podcast at checkout.
Straight hits, and then 1-2-3, and then the top of the sixth, give up a solo home run to Brent Rooker, who's a stud in my opinion. A's have some legit hitters. It's Butler, Shea Langeliers, Brent Rooker, I mean, even Soderstrom and Andujar, they're legit hitters. They have a legit hitting lineup. They might not have the best pitching, but they have some hitters over there.
They got a chance to actually do some damage in the AL if they make a trade for a pitcher. They need one guy at the top of the rotation, but they have a chance.
Yeah. The Brewers did score their lone run on a contact play, so it does work occasionally, and it works much better when you have Garrett Mitchell on third base instead of Rhys Hoskins.
Makes sense to me.
And then, you know, this game also leads to Joel Piamps, who pitched the ninth inning. The Brewers were already down 2-1 at this point, but gave up a solo home run and then went 1-2-3, and people are, you know, we make a post about somebody getting called up, and the immediate thing is who's getting sent down. It should be Piamps, and it's like, today is April 23rd. Yoel Piamps had a 3.05 ERA last year. Nobody with a 3.05 ERA last year is getting dropped in April. He would immediately be claimed, but the thing is that good relievers, they're A, hard to come by, and B, their earned run average is so volatile, especially early in the season.
Yeah.
You give up one run in 2/3 of an inning and you have like a 16 ERA.
Yeah.
You get one out and it drops down to 12.
Yeah.
So the ERA thing very early in the season, it's volatile. And I think the thing with Piamps that people are taking a little bit too much is that they remember the stretch that he struggled in July last year, and they are seeing that he's struggled a little bit to start the beginning of the season. And those are the only two stretches of Yoel Piamps that they're focusing on. Not the fact that he was like completely locked down in September last year.
Yeah, he was really good towards the end of the year last year.
Yeah. So I trust Yoel Piamps. You just got to work through it.
Great.
Now, my proposal is to swap his role with Nick Mears.
I love that.
Mears pitch the eighth innings and have Piamps pitch the sixth.
I love that.
Nick Mears has been fantastic.
Yes.
While Piamps has struggled, you take the setup role off of Piamps, you have him enter a game with a little bit less pressure. He just has to get ahead in counts and left a fastball in the zone. That's similar to what Chad Patrick did in the sixth inning. He got behind in the count, threw a fastball, and it got put over the fence.
Yep.
So it's, you know, it's not like this guy is terrible. He doesn't have good baseball playing ability. Just put him in some better situations and get ahead in counts. That's really all I got.
Yeah. So talking about Chad Patrick, guy's been tremendous so far this year. Six innings, he gave up 7 hits, 2 earned runs, and 7 Ks. Want to give him credit. He did a really nice job early in this game. He gave up 1 run after the Brewers took the lead 1-0, and he did a nice job. A's had 2nd and 3rd with no outs. He got back-to-back Ks to keep the game tied, and he got a pop-out after that. So being able to work with people on base and no outs, that's good practice for him to be put in high-pressure situations like that. And then talking about that home run from Rooker, Mitchell was this far away, dude. He was so close, dude. He almost made a spectacular play. But I mean, good effort from Mitchell. That ball was literal inches in couple rotations less, and he's probably catching that ball and bringing it back. And I did write down that Miller is the best closer in baseball. I saw a post about, it was probably about a month ago now, that he has like 24 of the 25 fastest registered pitches in like A's history, which is like, yeah, when a guy pumps it up to the 102 pretty consistently, you probably expect that.
Yep.
And the saddest thing that happened today, well, one last good thing, Durbin got his first ever RBI, so congratulations to him. The run that scored was Durbin's first career RBI. Brewers were 0-for-2 and runners in scoring position, so not that many ducks in the pond. The A's pitching staff did a tremendous job going up and down through the Brewers lineup, played good defense as well. And Contreras' 11-game hitting streak was snapped, but he would start a new one, so it's fine.
Yep. I mean, to be having 11-game hitting streaks is a good thing.
To be the third Brewer to have at least an 11-game hitting streak 20-some games into the season is a good sign.
I was just going to say, if you have one hitless day every other week, like, okay.
That's okay. Right.
You're looking at a 30-day, you know, a 30-game month, and you have hits in 26 of them or 25 of them. Like,
yeah.
We're good.
You're gonna be an all-star and make lots of money.
Exactly. I don't even remember who the quote is, but I've thought about it so many times. Like the difference between a 250 hitter and a 300 hitter is like one hit a week.
Really?
It's something like that, and I don't remember who the quote is, and somebody's probably gonna put it in the comments and they'll be like, how do you not remember that it was Jackie Robinson who said that or Cal Ripken who said that? And it's like I know. I should remember.
Sorry, baseball's been around for like 200 years, dude. My bad.
Right.
Every quote.
All right. Go to game 3 of the Brewers and Athletics series now. This game was fun. Easter Sunday. Fun game. You want to talk first or you want me to go first?
Let me get my thoughts out first.
I have lots written
down. You clean up all my mess. So first thing I wrote down was the A's had the literal complete opposite pitching performance from Saturday to Sunday. Literally complete opposite. The Brewers scored in 6 of the 8 innings that they had at bats. There was 8 players with hits. They scored 14 runs in this one. Durbin ended up getting his first MLB steal, which that first steal they had to challenge because they incorrectly called it on the field. And they reversed it and ended up being the 9th steal of the game for the Brewers in the 4th inning, which ended up setting the franchise record. So his first career steal, they had a challenge, and then it was overturned. So it was like, a lot of shit going on there. Also, the MLB debut of one Henderson, who we saw pitch his only career home game for the Timber Rattlers last year.
May 31st last year.
And he has shot all the way up to making his MLB debut for the Milwaukee Brewers. He was tremendous, dude. He showed some guts. He showed some gall. He showed some audacity. Every good pitcher needs a little bit of audacity, I think. You got to be able to challenge people. Alexander as well, doing a great job just being an innings eater. Same thing with Anderson so far this year. But I also wrote down that I really like that Murph, and I told you this earlier. I like that Murph has Haas catch new pitchers to take a little bit of the pressure off Contreras, you know, relay information that he sees. He likes this pitch here, you know, against guys like this. And Haas has done a nice job in his role. I gave credit to Contreras for dealing with all the pitchers. I want to give credit to Haas and Murphy this week. So they just do a tremendous job of how they deal with these pitchers. There's no secret to why they're so successful. Bench, you know, you're talking bench, I should say bullpen. My mind is still basketball, so I apologize. Bullpen guys, starters, young guys, new older guys that come in. Every pitcher that comes in here for the last, you know, 8 years has been successful, and there's no secret. They have a formula. They do a very nice job. And I wrote down all the players that got on base and what they did with it. So we had three players that got on base at least three times. Terang, Hoskins, and Haas. Haas on base three times. He had two hits and a walk. Hoskins had three hits, four RBIs, one of them being a home run.
So, can I jump in on Rhys Hoskins? Because I said last week that he's been seeing the ball better, starting with that Rockies series when he was just missing the foul line with some doubles. And his first at bat, he spoiled several pitches foul, ended up poking an RBI single between the second or the third baseman and the shortstop. His second at bat, he snuck a home run over the left field wall. And his last at bat in the seventh inning had a two out RBI single.
Yeah.
He's locked in right now.
Yeah, he's swinging a good bat right now. And then Terang, guy got on base three times. He got on base three times with three hits, and he scored three runs. So that's what you want from a leadoff hitter, a guy that gets on base, uses his speed to his advantage, and he just causes havoc. Him being able to steal literally puts so much pressure on the other team's catcher, and we're going to talk about that later in the Giants game. We had three guys that got on base four times. So on top of the three guys that got on base at least three times, we had three guys that got on base four times. You're talking about Yelly, Contreras, and Frelick. Yelly had two hits, two walks, and scored three runs. Contreras had two hits, two walks, and scored a one run. And Frelick got on base four times. He had three hits and a walk. So, I mean, the guys were having a goddamn party on the base pads.
Frelick, after this game, his average was up to 347.
Dude, he's having such a good year. He's such a sleeper right now. He's such a sleeper. He gives you such steady defense, and then he's getting on base, dude. He's a monster. I love that guy.
I love Sal Frelick. Yep, big Sal Frelick guy. All but two of the starters were on base at least twice.
Yeah, hang on. One sec. You know how much I love Sal Frelick? Literally, I taught my daughter when she was 2 years old. I said, Winter, I'm turning on the Brewers. And I taught my daughter that when I go like this, it means the Brewers are going on. And my daughter takes her little tiny baby toddler hands and goes, Brewers! And it's the cutest thing I've ever seen in my entire life. So
you gotta get her an Italian sausage stuffed animal.
She just goes like this, dude, with her little tiny baby hands.
All right, so let's start with Logan Henderson. You see what I did there? Logan Henderson got ahead 0-2 on all three of his batters faced in the top of the first inning. Finished with two strikeouts. I want to give credit to Logan Henderson for sitting a long time in between innings while the Brewers are putting up a shit ton of runs and then coming back into the game. If you play any sports, if you do any sort of exercise, if you're doing some vigorous exercise and you're sweating and then you go sit down for 20 minutes, like your body cools down while you're still sweaty and then you are cold when you're going back to exercising. That's a hard thing to do. And then you're talking about doing it at the professional level.
Yeah,
that's tough. He threw 83 pitches for his six innings. His last outing in AAA was 68 pitches, and also had a lot of long up downs in this game. The nine strikeouts that he had were tied for the third most in a Brewers debut. And three hits, one walk, and one earned run. Now he faced 21 batters. How many first pitch strikes do you think he threw?
Oh, I didn't look at this. 21 batters. I'm going to say, because he was really good. He only threw 83 pitches to get through six innings. I'm going to say 15.
Nicely done.
Oh.
15 out of 21 first pitch strikes for Logan Henderson. 71.4% of the batters that he faced were down 0-1.
Wow. That's good.
Now, a certain guy gets called up. We'll talk about his debut very soon. And Logan Henderson gets sent back down to AAA. And people are right away freaking out. He pitched well. Why is he being sent down? Typical Murphy. Typical Brewers. Send a guy down after he pitches well. Logan Henderson is a AAA pitcher this year.
Yep.
That's where he was supposed to be. We just talked about it. Less than a year ago. Less than 11 months ago, he was pitching at single A.
In Appleton.
Less than 11 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And now he got called up to make a spot start. He got called up to make a spot start because Tyler Alexander struggled in his last outing. We talked about it 2 weeks ago that Tyler Alexander is probably not in the Brewers' September plans. You know who is in the Brewers' September plans? Tobias Myers.
Yes.
Logan Henderson was called up to make this start in relief of Tobias Myers, who will be making the start tomorrow in San Francisco. That's why Logan Henderson was up. He was not up because we're calling him up and we're ready to have him start every game.
Yeah, every five days. Yeah.
He was called up to make one start in place of Tobias Myers.
Yep.
Now, I say that too. He will be back.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he is... Reggie said he feels called out. Reggie, you didn't go about it quite the way that a lot of people did in comment sections.
Yeah.
You mentioned that you weren't mad, you were just kind of confused. Whereas, like, the examples that I were giving of people being like, typical Brewer, they send a guy down after he does well. That's different. You know, if... And Reggie, I fully believe that if we explained that to you, that you'd be like, oh, okay, that makes sense. Versus, oh, why didn't they just get rid of Piamps? He's terrible. Because I did see that. But Reggie, we know where your heart's at, so you're good.
Yeah, I agree.
Now, offensively, Brewers base running causing chaos. Seeing tons of pitches while stealing six bases led to a balk that brought in a run. And the A's pitcher Springs threw 34 pitches in the first inning, walked three batters, balked in a run, gave up four runs. Now, the Brewers' six stolen bases they had in the first inning was a franchise record and a Major League Baseball record for an inning since the expansion era, which was 1961. Bryce Durang had three stolen bases in the first two innings, and the team tied the franchise record in three innings. The franchise record came on the call that you mentioned with Durbin that was originally called out. This game, my mind, it was good to see Jackson Chourio being a little, very, very strong emphasis on the word little, more patient. Jackson Chourio still wants to swing at every single pitch.
He's a young kid, man. He's excited to be out there.
He's aggressive. That's one of the reasons that he's good, is he's aggressive.
Yes.
He's not quite a guy who's going to wait for his pitch. He's a guy that can hit anything. That's part of what makes him a superstar.
That does make him a little rare. I agree with that.
So I understand, and I'll be honest with you, it's not remotely the same thing because it's beer league softball versus baseball, but I'm the same way. Like, I want to swing at every single pitch.
I get it.
Like, it's just part of being aggressive. It's just part of wanting to play the game.
I mean, you wait through eight other people to finally hold on to the bat to go up there. I understand. Yeah, 100%.
It's just wanting to play the game. Like, you want to be doing stuff, making impact on the game.
Yeah.
So, and you mentioned Young also. Like, he's not sitting on pitches, he wants to hit every single pitch.
Yeah.
And I like a little bit of that. Having a little bit of that in the lineup, I like it.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned Christian Yelich on base four times. Bottom of the sixth inning, Brewers are up 8-1. Hits a ground ball to the shortstop. Beats it out. Infield single. 8-1, and your 32-year-old former MVP is beating out infield singles.
Love that.
That's leadership without saying any words in my mind.
Yeah.
All right. Brewers Giants, game one. In San Francisco from Monday. What do you got from that?
So, excuse me. So, Priester he's been tremendous since he came up as well, only giving up one run in his first two starts. Now, he only gave up two runs in this one, but he got himself into his own trouble with the four walks. Only had three Ks. He also gave up four hits in four innings. So, you're putting a lot of players on base in those outs, right? And you're putting a lot of pressure on yourself for every single pitch to be perfect at that point when you start walking people. And young guys usually start to press. This is a guy who's been this is his third team now. He's been with the Pirates and the Red Sox. So he's going to have some of those thoughts. Like, it becomes a mental game. Baseball is the biggest mental game that there is. And when it becomes a mental game where you start walking people and you start thinking like, oh, man, it's happening again. It's good to be on a team like – yeah, it's good to be on a team like the Brewers, man. Around this really good locker room, really good coaching staff, the pitching lab, obviously. But, he's going to learn from this start. The Brewers are going to analytically shit all over this start, and they're going to figure out what the hell went wrong, and he's going to figure it out. And the next start, I bet you he goes six innings and dominates.
Yeah.
But, you know, Durbin, congrats to him. Again, this is the week of Durbin's first. Got a home run, two-run homer, so congratulations to him. We had six players with hits, and I'm glad you said what you said because you perfectly set it up. You didn't even know what I wrote down in my notebook. Every hit after the Durbin homer was a single.
Hmm.
They didn't do much. They didn't do much on offense, honestly. Yep,
right.
They didn't really press the Giants. The Giants did a nice job kind of navigating the hits, scattering them all over the game. Trujillo made a really, really nice catch in right field that needs to be talked about. This kid is playing right field and left field and playing both of them elite. That's not normal, just so everybody knows.
And he was off to a rough start defensively at the beginning of last year.
Yeah.
Because he hadn't been to any of these ballparks.
Yeah, so
he's not Sal Frelick level defensively, but he's a baller.
You damn well trust him out there on both sides. He's got a pretty good arm. He can run some stuff down. He closes the gaps well. He's a very good baseball player.
Dude, imagine 3 years from now when he's got 3 years of experience having been in all of the ballparks.
Dude,
he's going to win an MVP before he's 25.
Oh, he's going to win an MVP. The game is still a little fast for him at times, I think, which is why I think he's up there swinging sometimes. He hasn't seen every pitch, hasn't seen every pitcher. Mm-hmm. When the game slows down for him, this kid is going to be a fucking problem, dude.
he's going to be so good.
Dude, I said the same thing, Reggie. I was like, dude, Adamas looks weird in a Giants jersey, man. I was like, oh, I don't like it. I don't like it at all. After what you said about Corbin Burns, I'm going to give you credit. What you said about Corbin Burns in an Arizona jersey, I do agree. I think maybe the thing for me is that he has a single-digit number. I think that might be the weird thing.
Oh, that could be it.
Because, you know, I'm used to him with the 27. Now he's just got number two. It's like, that's not right.
Giants jersey looks way better on him than a Dodgers jersey would.
Dude, amen to that. I also wanted to give credit to Contreras. He caught who the heck was it? Third baseman for the Giants. Chapman, he caught Chapman trying to steal third. That was Contreras' seventh caught stealing of the year this year so far.
That saved a run.
It saved a run. We're at this point right here, we're 23 games into the season. He has seven caught stealings already. That's first at MLB. So Contreras is contributing on both sides of the plate again, like he was 2 years ago where he was really good at pitching, pitch framing. Yep. He's throwing people out now. That was the weakest part of his game last year. Everybody knew that he was a free base. He must have worked on that a lot in this offseason. You can see the work that he's put in. He's been very good this year. Obviously, first in MLB so far. This is a guy coming off an 11-game hitting streak, by the way. That's catching people stealing. Seven people caught stealing, and he's coming off an 11-game hitting streak. This guy's a silver slugger. This guy's a monster, dude. They just got – you can't let Adamas and Contreras go back-to-back years, man. They got to sign Contreras.
Yeah. I think they have him next year, too.
Yeah.
Connor brought up Yoho. We're going to get to Yoho in just a second. You brought up William Contreras getting that catch, stealing in the bottom of the second. That saved a run. Chapman would have been on third during the RBI single that happened, and the Brewers could have been down another run.
Yeah.
Or no, that would have tied the game at that point, I believe. Yeah, that would have tied the game.
That would have been 2-2, yeah.
Yeah, it would have been 2-2. Again, it ended up not mattering because the Brewers didn't score, but I have something to say on that. Also, Churio saved two or three more runs with his diving catch in the bottom of the third. That was the bottom of the third, right? I think that was the bottom of the third. Oh, no, that was the second also. That was also the second inning.
Yep.
Yeah, that's all in the second inning. Oh, I wrote third. I wrote third because Chapman would have been on third base. That's why I wrote third. Yeah, so three or four runs worth of defensive runs saved in just that one inning. And then, unfortunately, we got the opposite. In the fifth inning, defense was not great. And, you know, Joey Ortiz had some bobbles. Reese Hoskins dropped a relay throw. Terang had a couple bobbled hard hit balls at him. My two points that I want to make on this, the bullpen also gave up some runs as well. The points that I want to make on this is that when the defense is not their A+, which it's going to be most of the time, when the bullpen is not their A+, which it's going to be a lot of the time, if the Brewers are able to win those games with their offense, that is the next level for me. That's where the Brewers can go to the next level of being a playoff contender to a dark horse.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not ready to say that that makes the Brewers, you know, World Series contenders, because there's a lot of good teams in baseball. But I think that takes them from a wild card slash NL Central contender to a dark horse. So I want to see the Brewers win some games like that. Not that I want to see them have bad defensive or bullpen games, and both of them happened on Monday. But when the Brewers are in those situations, if they can overcome games like that and still win, that will be very impressive to me, and that will tell me that this team is maturing.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say, Willie Adames, his first two at-bats against the Brewers were not kind. First one was a strike him out, throw him out, double play, and then his second one was a Caleb Durbin web gem. So another thing of a first for Caleb Durbin was a web gem diving towards the third baseline, popping up and throwing out Willie Adames. Love to see that. You mentioned Priester. He started off kind of rough. He threw five balls to start the game. His first five pitches were all balls, and then locked in, ended up facing the minimum in the first with that strike him out, throw him out, double play. Had a lot of traffic in the second inning. Did only end up finishing the four innings, had the four hits and the four walks. Just not his best outing, not horrible, but needs to keep the walks down.
Agreed.
Now, I think we saw a similar approach to both the Brewers and the Giants in this game, whereas they were trying to get the starting pitcher out of the game. Robbie Ray threw 45 pitches in the first two innings. Priester was at 41. Both teams seeing a ton of pitches in the first game of a four-game series. I know we talked about this last season a lot, where if you can get into the bullpen of a team in the first game of a series, that can help you later on in the series when guys aren't as fresh and guys are pitching for the second time in 3 days and, you know, back-to-back days and stuff like that. That can benefit you. Craig Yoho made his debut. He's got to keep his changeup a little bit lower in the zone, but like Connor said, it is nasty. His change, all of his breaking stuff, his changeup, slider, sweeper, like he's curveball. He's got a curveball too. Like his stuff is nasty. He's got nasty stuff. His rotation stuff isn't quite as dominant as Devin Williams' changeup. But it's similar. It's really similar. It doesn't spin quite as much as Devin Williams' did, but if he's got better command over his fastballs and can throw a nasty changeup like that with more breaking stuff, he's going to be a monster. And he is going to be what I said when Devin Williams was traded. He's part of the reason that the Brewers could trade Devin Williams.
Yep.
Is because they have Craig Yoho.
Yep.
Now, the last thing I want to say in Brewers Giants game one, Christian Yelich and Rhys Hoskins accounted for two hits and four walks. Six of the on base tallies of 11 by the team. The Brewers had six hits and five walks. Rhys Hoskins and Christian Yelich accounted for six of them. If you add in William Contreras, that's eight out of the 11 times on base came from the 2-3-4 hitters or the 3-4-5 hitters.
You wonder why they're in the middle of the lineup. Weird.
But yeah, just need guys getting on base around them.
Great.
All right, let's go to last night's game. Now, man, Jose Quintana, what a pickup. You put a 35-year-old dude who's been around the league, you just toss him in the pitching lab and see what happens. And dude, the dude is just a beast.
That's literally that's the Brewers, bro.
Why not do it with Quintana?
Dude, they literally play claw machine with pitchers, bro. They're just like, yeah, this one. This guy, he's been in here a while. Yeah, we'll take this guy too.
They plucked Colin Ray out of Japan and made him serviceable for 2 years.
I'm like, what is going on, dude? I don't even try to understand. I just sit back and enjoy, man. No, it's crazy. Dude,
in 2045, we need a 30 for 30 on the Brewers 2020 pitching lab.
Dude, we're going to keep saying this until it freaking happens. We've both been saying this forever, bro.
Yeah.
It's got to happen. I want it to happen after the Brewers win a World Series. It's going to happen in our lifetime. I feel it.
Reggie said that game was fun. Yeah,
I agree. So Quintana is two of the four Brewers road wins this year, by the way. He has two of the four Brewers road wins because the Brewers are 4-7 on the road. Obviously, you take out the first three games of the year when the torpedo bats were kind of going crazy on the Brewers. They're 4-4 on the road. I only ask for 500 road play and you dominate at home. You're going to be a playoff team, dude. Simple as that.
I mean, if you have 80 home games and you go 55-35.
Yeah.
Or
they have 81 games.
It'd be 50-30. Not, I don't know why I'm thinking fives. 50-30 at home. Yeah. You're going to be 20 games over 500.
Yeah.
And you're 40-40 on the road. That's 91 wins.
Yeah, you're gonna be right in play for playoffs or wild card either way, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'll jump in real quick. Quintana monster. I have thoughts on Piamps. I'm just gonna say them real quick. I'm glad that he got to pitch in a game like this when the Brewers kind of broke it open, and we'll get to the part where it got broken open. Get him some low pressure situations. I absolutely agree. I love your mindset of moving him up a spot on the order.
Yep.
This was the Brewers won this one 11-3 for people who didn't know. This was the third game the Brewers scored 10 plus runs this year already, and it was the 13th time they scored at least 5 runs. So 13 out of 24 games, 54% of the games you're scoring 5 plus runs. You're giving yourself a chance to win.
Love that.
You're obviously going to win some games when you score 2 runs and 1 run, and you can't win with no runs. But if you're scoring 5 runs 50% of the time, you're going to be a competing team. This pitching staff is only going to get better as the year goes on. So love that for us. Yelly and Bowers both had big-time home runs in the same inning here. But to get the scoring started, a bloop single by Yelly and a really, really good read from Churio to get the third. Bad decision from the left fielder. Yelly got the second, and then Contreras cashed in to get the party started here. So it just starts from Churio getting on base and bloop singles, and base running is such a big key to this Brewers team. They both did a tremendous job. We've said it for the last few years. There's no better base runner than Christian Yelich, and he showed that on this play. Also, Churio being as good of a base runner as he is this early in his career is just dangerous. This guy, there's nothing this guy can't do. There's nothing. He does everything well. I'm going to talk about it. Turang had his third hit by the sixth inning, which is disgusting. Yelly got his fifth career grand slam to dead center. I got to give you credit. Me and you were talking. We're on Xbox. You're like, come on, Yelly, get a hold of this one. Hit a grand slam. And I was quiet for a second because you're like, yeah, I called that. I'm probably about 6 seconds behind you. And I knew it was a grand slam, which, whatever. The game was – we were already winning the game, so they kind of broke it open. But you're like, why are you being so quiet? I was like, I was just watching the grand slam. And it was like, dude, I can't believe you called that shit, dude.
That wasn't even the only thing I called in that game either.
It wasn't. I'm gonna let you give yourself your own flowers in a sec here. Bowers shortly after that hit a 2-run homer, part of an 8-run sixth inning that really broke this one open. Quintana did a really nice job getting out of a few innings. He had a little bit of a jam and he got out of it. Anderson, gave up an earned run in his inning. So did Hudson. I know you have some more thoughts on Hudson, so I'm not going to steal your thunder there. But, just keep scoring runs, keep getting people on base, keep hitting while others are on base, and you're going to be just fine, man. And Brewers, everybody was freaking out the first couple weeks of the season. They are still capable of having big-time innings. It is April, people. Let's relax.
Yep. So I looked it up. Last year, the highest runs per game was the Diamondbacks at 5.47. Dodgers at 5.26, Yankees at 5.01. So if you're talking over 50% of their games are scoring over 5 runs, they're going to be near the top of the league. Last year, they were 6th at 4.78. So I think that 5-run mark, I think, is a perfect mark to look for.
Yeah.
The other thing that I called was the bottom of the 8th inning when Brian Hudson is pitching, gives up a walk, a hit by pitch, and a single, and the Giants score their 3rd run of the game. And I'm like, man, he really needs a strikeout and a double play. And lo and behold, gets a strikeout, and the next batter grounds into a double play. And I'm like, yeah! So I called two things during last night's game, just by naming off the ideal situation. But Jose Quintana was painting from the jump. I thought he was going to be able to go 7 innings with the way that he was pitching, but he ran into some traffic in the bottom of the 6th. Also, the other part of this, it's not just focusing on what's happening on the Brewers' pitching side of it. Mm-hmm. The Brewers broke the game open in the top of the 6th inning. You're winning 11-1. You don't need Jose Quintana to go out for the 7th inning when he's already at, what, like 93 pitches.
Yeah.
So that's part of it. That's part of why he didn't go out for the 7th, because you don't need him to go over the 7th.
Yeah, the game was kind of well in hand, too.
The Elias Sports Bureau said that Jose Quintana is the first Brewers pitcher to win their first 3 starts with the Brewers since CC Sabathia won first 4 straight in 2008.
Oh, the vibes. Oh, the fucking vibes, dude. I'm feeling so good after hearing that. Oh,
The win probability added in this game, Jose Quintana was number one at 18.7%.
Oh, thank you for that, dude. Honestly, that I'm so happy right now. Hell yeah, number dude. Two
was Bryce Terang at 17.7%. He was on base five times with a career-high four hits. A great bounce-back game for him, given that he did not play well defensively in Game 1, and I believe he was 0 for 4 at the plate in Game 1. With this game, four hits, he's up to 337 on the year.
Dog. Balling.
Dude won the Platinum Glove, and now he's batting 337.
He's turning into a very expensive and valuable player for the Brewers.
He's the next guy that's going to get like an 8 for 82.
Yeah.
Brian Hudson still not reining in his command yet. He wasn't throwing his cutter as much, or the sinker, the new pitch that he was working on. He wasn't working that one in this game, probably because he's not quite comfortable with it yet because it is a new pitch to him. But did get out of the inning with only giving up the one run. Jake Bowers, you brought up his home run. He's doing just enough to stay on the roster. But I'm not saying that I'm calling for this guy to be up yet, but Brewers fans, I strongly urge you, and I could ask Javik Blake and he would tell you the same thing because he was in Double A last year. Pay strong, close attention to Ernesto Martinez in Nashville. That dude is doing crazy stuff. Last year, he was doing really fun stuff in Biloxi. He's a good first baseman. He's got like insane reach. Like there was plays where he was making stretches at first base and he's like doing the splits and he's raking for Nashville. So Brewers fans, pay very, very close attention to Ernesto Martinez in Nashville because he's going to be a Brewer before the end of the year. That said, the Brewers did also acquire Cesar Espinal as the player to be named later from the Royals when they sent Marcana over to the Royals, which doesn't look like a terrible deal. Like, if Marcana was on the Brewers, I don't know what he'd be doing right now.
Yeah.
So Cesar Espinal was the player to be named later for Canna. He's a 19-year-old pitcher. He had a 3.95 ERA in his 3 years in the Dominican League. He's 19 years old. So okay. The Brewers got a 19-year-old pitcher from the Royals just for signing Mark Canna to a minor league deal in the spring. And now they're going to toss that guy into the pitching lab.
Oh, dude.
Like mind. Things you love to see this.
Yeah, right.
So the Brewers have two more games in San Francisco. They play tonight and then they play tomorrow afternoon, and then they have three games at St. Louis, and we will have just the first game of their series in Chicago against the White Sox. Next Wednesday's game is at 6:40. So we'll have the first game of the White Sox series, three more games from St. Louis, and the final two games of the series that they're in right now next week. And hopefully we have some Milwaukee Bucks dubs to discuss next week as well. And we're talking about game six and the Bucks going to back to Milwaukee up 3-2 with a chance to win the series. So hopefully Bucks in six, and we'll have Brewers also six games next week. So we'll see you guys then. Thanks for tuning in. Reggie, Brian, Connor, Brett, Brad, thank you guys. And Wes as well. Thank you guys for the comments. We will see you guys next week. And if you are coming to the draft, shoot us a message. Let us know. We can meet up, say hi and stuff. So we'll see. Reggie said he's confused by this one, though. He's never been in the States, or maybe I've seen that wrong. The Brewers are very, very strong in their international scouting. That's where they found Luis Lara. They are very, very in tune with their international scouting.
Yeah, they're good at it. They'll be okay.
Which they have to be. That's one of the ways they can get an edge.
Yep.
That's how they found Churiel. So, yeah. All right. Thanks, guys. Like I said, send us a message if you're going to be at the draft, and we'll see you guys next week.
Peace out.